I was just reading the websites of other contributors, and he had a broken link. And so I wrote him and said, Mr. Bernstein, you have a broken link on your website. And
Steve Sherlock here for Franklin Matters, Franklin Public Radio, available anywhere, anytime, at WFPR.FM on the internet, and 102.9 on the FM radio dial here in lovely Franklin, Mass. Here in the glorious studio today with Camille Bernstein. Camille, thank you for doing this.
Oh, Steve, I was so excited when you invited me.
Well, it's April, and yeah, there's April showers, but it's just kind of cold today. But April is Poetry Month.
It is.
And we get to talk poetry.
I know, and it's a beautiful sunny day as well, too.
How about that?
Yes.
Now, April, because it's Poetry Month, you started doing some years ago, and you can get into the details. So this thing, kind of like once a day, you send out a poem and some thoughts? And
yes.
I just wanted to have it. I mean, I've done it probably 2-3 years, mm-hmm. and it's just like, my eyes open every morning.
Oh, that's so nice of you to say. I don't remember how it started, but about 10 years ago, I started celebrating. I guess I celebrated Poetry of the Month in a lot of different ways as a teacher.
Right.
So we would have like March Madness brackets.
Yes.
One time we had Haiku, where my kids put poems in Easter eggs and hid them all over.
Haiku. That's
Haiku.
Cool.
Yeah. Maybe we could do that next year as a celebration. That'd
sure.
be fun. And we had, I think it was the American Poetry Academy had this idea to do Poem in Your Pocket.
Yes.
Yeah.
I have that book.
So we did that 1 year. And then I really don't know how it started, but I have a listserv, and I post on Facebook, and I post to my school district, and I post online to a Facebook group of English teachers. And so every morning in April, I send a poem and a writing prompt, and I always make sure to say it could be a paragraph, a poem, or a list, or just some notes,
mm-hmm.
because you can really pressure yourself. And then I always find associated things. It might be a reading of the poem. It might be that I'm just gobsmacked by another poem that this
right.
poet wrote, or something yeah. that pairs with it. I receive at least 3 poems a day from various sources. I'm on other listservs. And
okay.
then you know how you go down a rabbit hole. So
yeah.
I just collect all year poems that I like.
Alice is a good friend of ours. We just go into rabbit holes any which
That's
way
great.
We can when we have time.
That's great. And I also have, of course, a number of English teacher friends, and we'll send each other ones,
mm-hmm.
and we'll read them together, and then I'll bookmark those. And I also follow a number of Instagram accounts
yes.
that post poems.
Right.
So through all of those means, I collect enough. I usually have about 50. And then on a good year, I backfill and get a lot of them ready and pre-schedule them. But some years, yes, in advance, and schedule send.
When you're really organized and
yes.
planned.
Yeah. When the year is right. This year feels a little like catch-as-catch-can.
Not quite there.
Right. But it becomes, in those cases, a meditative practice for me in the morning. Choosing the poem, picking out the poem, and then sending it out.
So there's, to dwell on that a
yeah.
little bit, not to interrupt the story, we'll continue
sure.
that, because
okay.
that's one of the good things about this type of conversation.
Mm-hmm.
So you wake up in the morning and you haven't done it yet, but you know which one you want to pick, or do you just then look at the list and decide which one you pick and then da-da-da?
I have a working document, and I might piddle around with it and have some poems, but I usually do a little introduction or short analysis that I usually write in the morning. I'm a morning person and
mm-hmm.
really
right.
like to be up all by myself in the morning when it's quiet. And especially in April, because the light is up with me, the birds are singing.
We've just turned spring ahead,
yes.
so things
yes.
are much more
I'm delightful. Feeling more alive. and it's just it really is a meditative practice that I couldn't keep up all year. And I also think if I did it weekly, then there would always be something. Maybe this Sunday I couldn't do it, and then I would get out of
it's
practice.
It's a different cycle.
Yeah, and I'm much more a binary person. I'm either on or not. Right. And so to do it in a burst is the right thing for me.
Mm-hmm. Because there's too much of a gap if you went weekly.
Yes.
There's too many distractions.
It wouldn't
rabbit holes.
Yes. It would feel like another task on my list of tasks rather than for a month. It's almost like I go on a retreat.
Well,
for
it's 30 days.
Yeah.
So you can dive into it and then, struggle a little bit, but then get through it and then wait for next year.
And there's also some people that I only know through the listserv. And they might be in Texas or they might be in New York State. And I reacquaint myself with them.
Yes.
I don't often get responses to my emails, which is fine. I don't think I could handle any kind
that
of...
That would be another challenge, for sure.
But I don't want... I definitely don't want people to think they couldn't write me. And there have been years I had one dedicated student who wrote a poem with every prompt that I sent out the whole month, and every day I would love getting
hooray,
his poem back.
Hooray.
And then he published a little, he self-published a little book at the end. And then last year, three women from the group and I met for probably 3 months, once a week, and wrote some poetry together, and that was really fun.
Yes.
Yeah.
Connections. Mm-hmm. Because, poetry, in many ways, we live in words, mm-hmm. whether we like it or not.
Mm-hmm.
Words are around us all the time. Yes, there are objects, but each object has a name, and thereby mm-hmm. it's a word.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes the word we agree with, sometimes the word has connotations.
Yes.
But if you and I are talking about the same thing, or we're talking with anybody about the same thing we think, and I've done other as an example, so green grass.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Your green grass may be like my green grass, and if we're talking about a grassy field, it's green,
mm-hmm.
and it doesn't matter exactly the shade.
Mm-hmm.
Whether it's evergreen, whatever green, whatever green, it doesn't matter. But if there was an art piece or a knitting project, and then you needed to complete it because you ran out of the knitting, that green matters, and you need not just the same shade, you need something from the same batch and the skein
exactly.
in order to match it.
Exactly.
And in those cases, it does matter.
Mm-hmm.
So we live in this world where some things matter and some things don't, and it's part of our juggling in order to figure out how we're going to do things, and hopefully we'll use the right words most of the time and thereby get what we need and get what we want, and people say, oh, that was pretty cool, as opposed to, what are you trying to do?
I know. I tell my students there are really only like 7 stories in the world, and the reason why we read literature or poetry is because of the words, because of
right.
the details.
Right.
There's the, a person goes off and discovers themselves.
Mm-hmm.
There's the redemption story. There's the fight for love story.
Mm-hmm.
But we keep reading and experiencing the same stories, kind of the Joseph Campbell monomyth. And we just love the details, and I love the details. In fact, my favorite poems are probably those that express something that might be pretty common but uses a clever metaphor to
mm-hmm.
explain it.
Right.
And so I can re-experience it again. So there's something familiar but also novel about it, which
True.
Is what humans
True.
Want. We want
yes.
both security and playful novelty.
Yeah,
and I feel like poems, one thing about the project that I always make sure that I choose poems that are accessible. I have to be able, even as an English teacher, read it once or twice, maybe, if it's particularly delicious, but absolutely get something the first time, because
mm-hmm.
I feel I read some great poetry when I was younger, but it was all classical. And I felt like da-da-da-da-da-da-da, and
yeah.
it just didn't capture. So I discovered, and I took a lot of more classical classes in college, So when I had a terrible breakup, I actually was living in Franklin, and we couldn't rid ourselves of each other. So I moved back home, and I got back into writing poetry and reading tons of contemporary poetry. And it changed my life. It healed me.
Mm-hmm.
And I read and read and read for a couple of years, and I started writing again, and then I thought, you know, I'm going to try to publish something. And I happened to meet my husband because I published a poem from that time period.
Okay.
He published in the same journal that I published in, and I happened to publish another one. That's what happened. And so late at night, I think it was the end of the quarter when I should have been grading, I was just reading the websites of other contributors, and he had a broken link. And so I wrote him and said, Mr. Bernstein, you have a broken link on your website. And so we started talking, and 5 months later, we met in person, because he was out in grad school in Montana, but he was from Massachusetts.
Right.
And I would kill my children if they did this, but he moved right in. And that was it.
Times have changed a little bit. Yeah.
So poetry got me. And my favorite line that he tells me is he wrote for, I think, 7 years after college. And that was the only thing he published. And he said, and he worked so hard every single day, wrote 3 novels and countless poems. And he said, it got me a wife and my wonderful kids. It got me a life. And so it was successful, his one publication. So I guess to connect the two stories is I felt intimidated by contemporary poetry, and I think a lot of people do too. So if I can find accessible poems that you just get a little burst. I used to call the collection Vitamin P, because I always think...
Vitamin poetry.
Yes, because this time of year we need vitamin D, mm-hmm. and so every year I invite people to get some vitamin P. This year I didn't, because I was doing the particular project on grief, so I decided not to call it that, because it felt a little bit...
There's multiple threads within this, so I'll choose this one and then come to the others, but I think you may be aware there Franklin is another first, has used some of its opioid funds to participate in art pharmacy.
No.
So for people who are having some struggles in mental health, et cetera, they can go to their provider, and the provider through Mass Cultural Council and Art Pharmacy, who is a company that facilitates this specifically, they can get access to, whether it's tickets to a movie, tickets to the Black Box, tickets to potentially a poetry reading that would help them as part of their therapy.
Oh my God, you've got me choked up. That is beautiful. That is, you know, in Scotland, doctors can prescribe nature, and that fits in with.
Sure, absolutely.
That fits in perfectly. Yes. I love that. Yes. I'm going to look that up when we finish our conversation.
There was a thing at the Black Box March 5th where Michael Bobbitt from Mass Cultural Council, the name escaped me, of representing Art Pharmacy, which is the company that facilitates that. Corey Shea, our cultural arts and creative economy director, facilitated, and of course Amy Frigoletti from the town administrator's office, and then other nonprofits, cultural folks were gathering to get information as to how do I sign up, because the program would effectively not just pay the ticket, potentially the transportation, and you can bring somebody. So
that's wonderful.
In terms of helping people, that can be an aspect of their reintroduction in some cases, or their exposure in getting relief, whether for grief or whatever.
there's lots of
opportunities there.
I cannot wait to hear more about it.
Yeah, so I think even a couple of days ago you had 2 poems from Coleman Barks, translating Rumi. Rumi is one of my favorites, although I've also found that in some circles, as I've started taking kind of that deep dive into some of the that Middle Eastern Khazao world, there are definitely sects within it or areas of thought that deviate significantly from others. And Coleman and some of his translations are not appreciated by some people.
Really?
It was like, that was an awakening for me.
How interesting.
So, yeah, there's a name who's, I'll have to go figure it out. She's got her second book, but she also sings Rumi, which is an absolutely wonderful experience.
I'm going to have to, I want you to send me that. Do you remember that thing you showed us at the poetry last fall after the election? You showed us the video that you'd seen. It was like bluegrass video of people dancing.
Oh, Resilient.
Yes.
By Rising Appalachia.
Okay.
Yes. Yeah,
I'm just going to write that down.
Yep. No, that's also an end page in my monthly Q&A at the Senior Center, and because it's now kind of my anthem, that one chorus, you know.
It's beautiful.
Continue to show up at the table, learn to listen. Yes, so I practice that a lot in my reporting. And then, of course, poetry is my balance, right? So I'm not just head down taking notes in a meeting about this and that and trying to follow it.
You're a prolific poetry writer. You really are. It seems like it's your meditation.
It's certainly my outlet. It helps me make sense of it. Yes. Yeah.
And you, I love that you take a parameter. I tend to read poetry that's free verse, but I love that you take a parameter and then you fit inside it. That's like a problem. And I think it works well with your creative but also very logical mind.
Yeah, and I think the evolution, because when you, the haiku caught my eye, because I had developed my own kind of shirku, adding two syllables to the 17, made it 19, 19 still impossible. If you've ever played cribbage, 19's an impossible score. Yada, yada. But then I was also finding that because I like to make it accessible. Sometimes people had to work too hard to get the meanings because there were multiple meanings in there. And again, whatever you bring to it opens it. But for the point that I was trying to make, it was not enough in some ways. So the ghazal in its format, because they were couplets, so sometimes I did take 5, 6, 10 shirku and then put that in a ghazal format. That kind of worked. And then as I got into that deeper dive and figured out, oh, that they're not doing it right. This is the way you're supposed to do it. This is this. And I've consolidated now sort of my shirzal, if you will.
Shirzal, I love it.
Is two sets of couplets. 6 couplets in part one, 7 couplets in part two, because at 6s and 7s is kind of chaos.
One line off of a sonnet.
One couplet off from a sonnet, yes. But, you know, trying to make some sense of the chaos that is out and around us from time to time whenever you stop and what's going on?
It is putting everything into either, I think of it as like a microscope. I even look for poems that only, like visually, only fit on a certain amount of a page.
Oh, yes.
I'll even skip if I get a link in the morning and I'm intrigued and... there's something about poems that I mean, in college I would read, you know, the In Memoriam, the book-length poem. But when I open it and I see it's really long, it's not that it turns me off and I won't read it, but it's definitely one I won't share. Because I know that a lot of people are reading these in the morning before work or at work, and they don't need 3 pages of a poem.
No, it requires an extra presence to really devote that time. And again, even if it's 3 pages, that's a significant piece of time versus a page, something formatted on a page. It's at least, oh, I can do this, you know?
Yes. And it doesn't feel overwhelming. And it also, I'm impressed that a poet can say that thing.
Yes.
In that economical way. I want to read just a line of one, a couple of two that just have a single line.
Sure.
One is by Dorothea Grossman, and it's titled, I Have to Tell You. I have to tell you, there are times when the sun strikes me like a gong, and I remember everything, even your ears. And here's the other one. One of my favorites, W.S. Merwin.
Yes. Familiar with his writing.
This one's called Separation. Your absence has gone through me like thread through a needle. Everything I do is stitched with its color.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the words, the image, the mixing of the images in a way that's somewhat familiar and yet different.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's present in both of those. Yeah.
There's a concrete image, and there's an abstract idea. And when I used to teach poetry as like a creative writing class, I would ask students to focus on what you're trying to do is take something metaphysical that is ephemeral, that's floating out there, but somehow anchor it in something concrete. I don't tend to like poetry that's too opaque or too... not imagistic, but too... I tend not to like poetry that...
Like T.S. Eliot or Ezra Pound, where there are too many reference points to
things? Certain times I do want to do that work, and I like discovering that work and figuring out every word and looking them up.
Yeah.
I just tend not to like poetry that feels all abstract emotion, that I want to be led where the poet wants to lead me, but I know that we're so individual that without some common concrete thing that I can visualize in my head, I have a hard time with a lot of the just emotional, opaque references.
Right. I think that's where, for me, and going back even to the green grass example, that I've worked into one of the poems that I've read a few times, but probably do publicly, the gets to that accessibility piece.
Mm-hmm.
If you can create the image and the process and then bring somebody along successfully, then you're there. But there's some times where it starts going in such a way that you just don't feel comfortable with it. And thereby, that's where the poem just, you can come back to it. And sometimes if it's the same thing, then it's just not working. Sometimes you can come back to it, you know, and all of a sudden now whatever the approach is, you've got it. And then I also like going back and having heard or read and then reread and then come back years later, coming back to the same poem, finding the same thing plus.
Yes, because your experiences are different. Your reference points are different.
Right.
You understand the nuances of language differently. It's kind of like when you're a kid, and one of my children, I'm embarrassed to say I can't remember which one of them told me they were so excited. I think it was Virginia. She said the first time she, you know, had romantic feelings, she, or even breakup, she said, I understood what all those songs meant. And I remember that too. I would listen to Bonnie Raitt, and I knew that she had gone through some stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And I hadn't gone through it yet.
Right.
And then
right.
The best thing about heartbreak is you're like, yes, I understand the blues now. I understand Bonnie Raitt singing about all of her heartbreaks. And that's the same with poetry. And sometimes I think the literature we read in high school is something that people should, in their 40s, should reread with a class. It should be a federally funded, you go back and take some humanities classes.
Well, and the choices of what we read, especially in a school environment, I saw an article earlier this year, I think maybe it was late last year, where a college student went to a poetry reading and realized for the first time that some poets were alive. Because everything she had read prior were dead poets. mm-hmm. whether classical or mm-hmm. sometime prior, mm-hmm. she did not understand that,
that it was
people,
a living
people
art
were
form.
Still doing this.
Yeah.
That's astounding.
Well, I and think we're not I a culture. I don't think we're a culture that has poetry
as much in our blood as it should be.
No. I think you were talking about the Rumi. Well, the Persian culture definitely has. The Iranian culture has poetry everywhere.
Right.
It's still a way to celebrate. It's,
yes.
People memorize it.
And not write it. Absolutely. Yeah. And that's one of the issues with Rumi, because from what I understand, based upon, again, the readings, he would go along and just verbalize extemporaneously, mm-hmm. and people would be following him, writing down, trying to write down and capture what he said so that they could record it, because he was not writing it.
And he also might have said it differently a few times.
We find that in even going through public meetings, where if you got a specific statement, you can't say the same thing 14 mm-hmm. times, because mm-hmm. human nature is such mm-hmm. that you just can't. You got to add something to it. You got to give it a little bit. And I think even in talking with actors, you got a specific play, you've got a role, you got to deliver, but you still got to bring it to life. Mm-hmm. And every life, each day, is slightly different. So trying to deliver exactly the same tone and the word, it's a miracle to a certain extent that some things actually happen.
That things could go on for a year on Broadway, yeah. and that you could
and
find,
still do it.
Still be fresh.
And still be fresh.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Well, I'm having the same conversation with my students right now. My sophomores just started Macbeth, and they were a couple of them were horrified. I was surprised to hear that we weren't going to read the entire play. Now, these are kids who would complain if I assigned them something to read, but they couldn't believe it. But I told them, my colleague and I, during COVID, we had to cut it down because we were seeing our kids every other week.
Right.
And it worked. We summarized or left out a couple scenes. They were like, you know, when King Duncan's talking to his soldiers, or the comedy, which sometimes doesn't, if you're not watching it.
Right.
And also, what we read are distilled portions, and then we view it, because the plays were meant to be watched. Just like the poetry.
They were meant to be delivered.
Yes.
Absolutely.
And the poems were meant to be embodied. Mm-hmm. And so I can understand someone bristling at the idea of setting down Rumi, because you had to be there. It was kind of like you had to be there. You had to be at the concert. It's not quite the same as a studio album to hear it live.
Right. Yeah, and with all due respect, there are artists, Gordon Lightfoot being one that comes to mind, where his album he delivered in concert because that was the approach that mm-hmm. he thought his listeners wanted. Mm-hmm. They bought the album for a reason. Mm-hmm. They should listen to it that way, because that's what they wanted. So he never varied or deviated an iota. And that's what he did. As opposed to, and I know even on the radio here, I'll give them a slight plug, Turntables, they're doing albums. Uh-huh. And they focus mostly on kind of the live cuts. Mm-hmm. Because that's where the variations occur. Mm-hmm. And they'll do it live in this way, live in that way. And it's two different sets. They may do an extra riff or whatever. There's glory in that, too.
There is.
And they're trying to recreate that experience, so you didn't have to be there. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Whether in East Chupipi or East Acapulco or wherever, you could listen to it and then go through the album, et cetera. So.
I tend not to, if I haven't seen them in concert, I tend not to want to listen to live albums. And here's the reason why. For me, it's more listening. It's being there. It's feeling all my senses while I'm at the concert.
Right.
It is that mystical feeling of being in communion with other people and having an experience together.
Yeah.
And
the real community vibe.
Yes.
Because there is that, not tension, but there is a sense of the body, the greater body that's happening there.
And I think people who, like the guys on Turntables, they're more experts and they're deep diving. That seems an intellectual exercise instead of an embodied sensual exercise, whereas concerts for me are I want to feel it. I want to experience it. And to be honest, I sometimes leave early because I don't want to ruin that feeling by sitting in a car for an hour and a half to leave the parking lot. So I will often leave, you know.
To maintain the vibe, yes, while you're going.
That's it, yeah. Yeah.
As opposed to it getting spoiled by frustration.
Yeah. Maybe the dopamine hit doesn't last long enough for me. I wanted to say something about accessibility.
Yes.
I don't think so much anymore, but I remember about 20 years ago, people would be a little snotty about accessible poetry. And I don't like schlocky or maudlin sort of poetry, but Billy Collins was one that people would kind of, well, you know, he's just, everyone can access him. And I just don't, I'm just not that type of person. And so I appreciate his ability to take an everyday moment and then put a little, like, wise twist on it.
Mm-hmm.
Or today, it's not warm enough today, but I usually, sometime during April, will send out his poem called Today because it's so bright and beautiful. And I'll read a line from it. If ever there were a spring day so perfect, so uplifted by a warm, intermittent breeze, and that's not today, that it made you want to throw open all the windows in the house and unlatch the door to the canary's cage, indeed to rip the little door from its jam, a day when the cool brick paths and the garden bursting with peonies seemed so etched in sunlight that you felt like taking a hammer to the glass paperweight on the living room end table, releasing the inhabitants from their snow-covered cottage so they could walk out holding hands and squinting into this larger dome of blue and white. Well, today is just that kind of day.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, I saw him a couple of times at the Dodge Poetry Festival, got his autograph for another of my internet writer friends. And he was the inspiration for Shirku and eventually Shirzal, because he had come up with his own, I think it was a parandel. It was meant to be a parody of a French form. And he concocted it such that it was almost impossible because there was a specific rhyme scheme that if you went so far, then it just was never going to work. And the story he told was that, you know, he introduced it, gave the story. This is a parody, that reads it, people react. And then a couple years later, there's an anthology of poems like that that people composed because he devised the format.
Oh, that's great.
It was like, wait a minute, what?
That's great. Did you hear when he talked about overhearing haiku? Oh, I'm gonna find this because he would start to hear in everyday conversations haiku.
Oh, yeah.
And he heard these teenage girls.
I would call that found ku.
Oh yeah, that's great. Yes, here it is. No, that's not it. I don't. Yeah, I'll have to send it to you later. But he says he overheard a girl saying, and then she said to him, and he said to her, and he started to notice like 17 syllables, and he would pick them out and he would write them down. Yep. Oh, it was adorable. Yeah. It was adorable.
Yeah, because I think one of the Instagram accounts that I think you follow, I ended up following, was like Fridge Poetry Haiku.
Mm-hmm.
It's interesting how the combinations just come together, and it can be that simple. So that, yeah, I termed it foundku. I'd be reading things, and all of a sudden, well, there it is.
There's one.
It's either 17 or 19 is a shirku. There's one. It's foundku. They did not know that they were writing a poem, but they did.
You're a poet and didn't know it. Isn't that the thing we always said when we were younger?
Yeah, that does come up. Yes.
I really like found poem for people who are afraid to write poetry because it's already there.
Yeah.
It's an accessible way. We did a workshop together about it. It's an accessible way for people to get over the fear of the blank white page.
Yes.
And I do some of it myself. I have a couple other Instagram accounts. One of them, I was invited by a friend to read his favorite book, Ulysses by James Joyce.
Ooh.
Yeah, it was. And I took on the challenge, and I found, and he had told me, you know, he had read it with two different reference books together, and I thought, I don't know if I have the energy for this, but because he was my friend, I decided to read it. And I loved the language, but I just kind of gave up. So what I ended up doing, it was the 100th year of its publishing.
Right.
And so I made a poem on every right-handed page, a found poem. And then I posted 100 of them.
Oh, okay.
And that was really fun. And I felt like, you know, James Joyce would appreciate this. He would understand that I was...
You made it accessible in that way. Because then somebody could come and say this, and then, oh, what's on the page? Oh, this!
Yeah. And he had just delicious language to work with.
Yeah.
And I felt like I was past the point of pride where I have to say I read Ulysses and it's the greatest piece of literature ever. Maybe it is. It wasn't for me, but I have a very, very close connection with it now because of that project.
Sure.
Another one that I did was, have you read Hitchhiker's Guide to the Universe?
Yes. So the answer is 42.
The answer is 42. So, and I'm going to pick this one back up this summer. But I would take pages of anything. The phone book, the... I started with lots of novels, but self-help books. And then I would find a found poem, kind of like, what's the answer here on this page? And that was really fun. I had a fantasy, although I would never do this to Felicia, of going into the library and just, you know, vandalizing page 42 of books. Just do a few a week, and then somebody would have a poem later. But I would never, ever, ever do that to our dear librarians.
Right.
So I could Xerox it and then stick it in page 42. That would be okay.
Yes, adding something I think would be just as interesting. Yeah.
Yeah, so maybe I'll, as I said, I'm going to get back to that project. So maybe I'll make it more community performative that way, where I drop off the poem in that book at the library.
Yeah. Yeah. I have a stack of index cards that from my Shirku days, that was just the right size.
Perfect size.
So you could, you could just slip an index card. It could be like somebody's bookmark.
Yeah.
And it's not. It's something else.
Yeah. I think there's there's a great account I follow called Found Paper, and it's like somebody's grocery list or like a note from a neighbor that they find.
Yep.
There was something in the aughts or even before in the 90s called Found Magazine where it was all sorts of objects like an old cassette tape, somebody's boot, and it was beautiful. I love that web page. Yeah. But now I just follow one that it's just a beautiful something that somebody found, and it might be a little note from a kid.
Mm-hmm.
You know, remember to be mad at mom in the morning or something like that. It's everywhere. It's all around us.
It is. And it's there when you look for it. Sometimes even when you don't look for it, it's still there.
Mm-hmm.
But certainly is much more impactful if you have the presence to look for it, and then the acceptance is just take it in. And then, you know, dig a deep dive or go through this tunnel or that tunnel or or just enjoy it for the moment. Because this too shall pass, so might as well enjoy it.
Yes. I tell my student, one of my favorite things every year is asking kids or letting them at the beginning of the year, I have a poetry unit, and I say, why don't you get 10 minutes to tell me the worst things about poetry. Why do you hate poetry?
Mm-hmm.
Just spit it all out.
Right.
And then we use that about what they don't like about it to talk about what would make a good poem. And then I say, well, do you like this music? Do you like this artist? Do you like this? Well, it's just got music set to it.
Sure.
You like poetry. Some of them come out actually liking poetry. I don't have, you know, 100% converts, but I do love sharing poetry with students.
Yeah, and I think the approach, at least to potentially have them stop and listen. They may or may not accept it, but, you know, we're not going to convince everybody of everything all the time.
No.
We're not about to change them. We're just about to just say, oh, by the way.
Expose them to.
Consider this.
Yeah.
Because I think the other, the book that at some point in time I may get to write, other than compiling my own poetry, be what I had been pulling together as kind of the bingo theory. You know, bingo the game, mm-hmm. where you get the cards and somebody's calling numbers and sometimes numbers match and then you got a row or a diagonal, etc. As I was going through my formative days, it was kind of like, well, that happened, and then if it happened again, and then if it happened a third time,
mm-hmm.
pay attention to it.
Mm-hmm.
Why?
Mm-hmm.
And that kind of then, well, obviously for 3 to 5, it's still bingo, but I think the bingo theory kind of in the gist of it says, if you're willing to look at you and what you've got, you meaning your skills, mm-hmm. and sometimes they're not necessarily fully formed. Mm-hmm. You may not know what they are yet. Mm-hmm. but be comfortable with yourself and then figure out what you can do with
mm-hmm.
that.
Mm-hmm.
That may have been foretold for you, or you may come to understand that through the bingos appearing.
Mm-hmm. mm-hmm. You just have to be open to the signs.
Right.
And I don't mean that in like a necessarily mystical or spiritual way, but just be open to a suggestion that makes you think in a different way. I have a friend who reads tarot cards, and she's not someone I would have expected to read tarot
mm-hmm.
cards.
Right.
And she said, yeah, I don't take it too seriously, but it's a way to start my day and get me thinking about
right.
something.
Right.
And I thought, oh, well, that's no different than me reading 2 or 3 poems every morning.
True.
I just need a couple lines to get me
yep.
thinking
mm-hmm.
for the day.
Yeah.
And I think poetry is the closest thing to religion that I have. It's like the distillation of words to try to access the sublime and the universal.
Mm-hmm.
That to me
right. Because certainly
religion.
Poetry is in through all the liturgical texts
mm-hmm.
in all the denominations that I've heard of so
mm-hmm.
far.
mm-hmm.
Never mind connections to song, which is another form of poetry, because even spoken word, there can be rhymes within it.
Mm-hmm.
And you just add some music to it, and now you got a song. If you don't, then it still can't stand on its own.
It's a lyric.
It's a lyric.
Sure.
Yeah. Well, this has been cool.
Yeah.
Thank you for taking some time to talk poetry.
Anytime. I love it. Not even during National Poetry Month.
We'll just have to do this on a more frequent basis.
I would love that. I would love that. People can still sign up if they would like to. We are only on April 9th. There are 21 more days.
Mm-hmm. We'll include the links in the show notes.
Sure.
So that people can, you know, not have to scramble right now, but listen and then, oh, there's something in the show notes. Go click.
Great.
And even if it's after April, they can just sign up for next year.
Yes. Or I have access. I always provide access to previous year's lists of poems.
Okay.
So you can get access to a document that has a poem, the writing prompt, and the additional information.
Right, so you can at least get exposed,
mm-hmm.
check it out. Yeah, this is for me. I'll make sure I sign up next year.
Yes.
Or if you're lucky enough, then you've within the April month, you just go with each day
yeah.
and see what happens.
All right. Well, thanks so much.
Well, thank you for taking time. You know, it's just, it needed to happen for poetic reasons, so we'll leave it at that for poetic reasons.
Thanks so much, Steve.
And of course, quick reminder to listeners, we do this because Franklin matters. We are now producing this in collaboration with Franklin TV and Franklin Public Radio. This podcast is my public service effort for Franklin, but we can't do it alone. We can always use your help. How can you help? If you can use the information that you find here, please tell your friends and neighbors. If you don't like something here, please let me know. Through this feedback loop, we can continue to make improvements. And I thank you for listening. For additional information, please visit franklinmatters.org. If you have questions or comments, you can reach me directly at suresteve@gmail.com. The music for the intro and exit was provided by Michael Clark and the group East of Shirley. The piece is titled Ernesto Mañana, copyright Michael Clark and Tin Type Tunes in 2008, and used with their permission. I hope you enjoy. By the way, you can also subscribe and listen to Franklin Matters Radio on your favorite podcast app. Search in podcasts for Franklin Matters.